Are we ready?
Sorry. We are ready.
Okay, I call to order the Wednesday, August 31st, 6:30 p.m. Board of Ethics special meeting. Let's start with introduction of board members, and we have a new board member. So can you really briefly introduce yourself and tell us a little something about yourself? And then we'll go around the room and we'll all maybe say who we are, what our background is, and maybe why we're interested in serving on the Ethics Board.
Okay. My name is Tony Warfield. I'm brand new to the Board of Ethics. So I'm on the board because I was interested in government and wanted to try to get involved some way. So I looked at a number of different boards and saw that this one would be interesting to serve on. I've been a volunteer firefighter for 4 years and have been a little bit involved with like open government and forums and things like that. And then right now I work full time for Amazon.
So. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
And Ohad, do you want to go next?
Sure. Ohad Lowy. Also a recent addition to the board. I think this is my second meeting. My full-time job, I'm with the Attorney General's office with their labor and personnel division. So this is deals with a lot of stuff that I advise and look at as well. So I thought it'd be a good fit and just wanted to get involved.
Okay, thank you. And I'm Joe Atkins, and I'm currently serving as the chair. And I am a legislative aide in Olympia, and I do a lot of other business stuff like real estate investment. I'm also a licensed real estate broker, and my wife and I run businesses. I'm serving as president of the Ruston Business District down there, and we're starting a farmer's market and some other cool stuff. So I'm a very busy guy, and I'm really honored to serve as chair, and I really appreciate that honor. And Bill.
He's really good, too.
I'm trying to dumb.
Okay. Bill Sims, second term. Retired, 32 years with Boeing up in Renton. Did a lot of training. Boeing is really good, I think, on ethics, so we've had a lot of training of ethics. Taught some things associated with that, and thought this would be a good fit to get involved and sort of do my part and make a difference.
And I'm Linda Batway. I'm retired now, but I had a long career as leading hospital social work departments. And at the, I was at Harrison Hospital in Bremerton for the last 17 years and was part of starting a medical ethics board there. Mm-hmm. And did a fair amount, served on it for 10 or 12 years once we got it going. And did a lot of training for staff and in the community around medical ethics. Seemed like an okay thing to keep going on. But it's a bit different.
Well, thank you. Well, I would encourage you all to talk after the meetings and get to know each other better. I appreciate you all serving. Let's jump right into business. So we have two items of discussion for this month's meeting. The first one was an idea that Linda brought up in our last meeting. We had kind of a unique circumstance where we had an issue come before us that, you know, got in the newspaper and was part of a really controversial topic. And we ended up reviewing the ethics code, and we did not have any reason to investigate the matter further because it did not or was not applicable to our code. It was more of a political issue, in my opinion. So we had a robust discussion about it, and we went through the code line by line. And we had a very big audience, and we have a feeling that the audience maybe doesn't feel like they were served well, or the meeting was open enough, or that they understood the process. So we want to talk about the resources that we have on our website. We want to talk about the process that, you know, the complainantee gets the information that they get when they file a complaint. And we also want to talk about other interested parties and what information we provide them. So that's one item, and I just want to mention the other item next. Before we get into discussion on number three. So most of my experience with the Tacoma Ethics Code pertains to cases I've read about or cases that I've heard. So I have a minor change that I would like to propose, and I'm not in a real big rush to do it, and I don't want to direct it at any individual in particular. But I think there is a small change that we should consider making. And of course, any change that we make or propose will go to the city council, and they'll make a decision on whether or not they want to change the municipal code. So I probably should have reworded that to pertain to, give me a second here, the definition of remote interest. So my apologies for that, and maybe we should make that amendment if there's any procedural things I need to do that. But that is what I want to discuss. And I would like to go back, before we discuss that, to number three, and how we can improve our website. And one idea that Linda and I discussed off the record was just having the ethics code actually attached to the website. We have the whole entire municipal code, and we want to make information as accessible to people as possible if people have an interest in what we're doing. This is a public committee, and we want to be as transparent as possible. So any other thoughts? Yes.
Well, I just was Doris, if you know, because I haven't looked recently, when you get to the city's website, you can find boards and commissions, so you find this one. Does it? Yes. What comes up?
Agendas and minutes.
But what happens is when you go to the website to file a complaint, there's a place where you can click to get onto the ethics code. But it's what it has is 350 some pages of the whole municipal code, which makes it a little hard for that for anybody.
And that's under the board of ethics.
It's in the part where you file a complaint.
We can fix that. It doesn't need to link to the entire municipal code.
Yeah,
there is an index in there, but the index is pretty long.
Right, but it's just if we want to make it accessible to people, we could do I think a better job with that. I think also it would be great if we could show it, but anyhow, it has a place for someone to write what their complaint is or what their concern is, but it doesn't encourage them to give specific examples or focus on facts, you know. And so since we only then look at what they tell us, as you told us last time, we look at it to say if what they said looks like it violates the code. Mm-hmm. If the person doesn't write it in a way of facts, but says, I think this is a problem, it easily can feel to them like they didn't get heard and we didn't get enough information. So it seems it could be a little bit of prompting to make it just seem a little more accessible for people to at least give us all the facts they have, you know.
Can I ask where is filing the complaint on a different board than the Board of Ethics?
No, I can bring it up. Let me see if I can.
Or maybe it's not on the mobile version.
Let me see if I can bring it up.
It's in a different part.
Take a little bit for this. I should have probably had it ready to go.
Oh, is it? Oh, no.
What does that say? It didn't work. So we may not be able to get on. Let's see what we can do here.
I think that was just to the drive itself.
Just to the drive.
Yeah.
Yeah, and our great staff probably told, you know, our newer members too, people could file an ethics complaint in a lot of different ways, almost any way they want. They could send an anonymous email. They could send an email. They could complain in some other kind of public way. But if there was some way that we could help people when they do have a legitimate complaint to do it more easily, then, you know, that's something that we should discuss and we could always improve upon.
Not as functional as it should have been, probably, but it seemed like even though they heard the piece about the open meeting law, I think there was a lot of confusion about what our process was going to be. And we didn't do, I think, there were questions after, and we sort of, there was a sense that we weren't supposed to answer questions, and it seems like some of them probably were procedural ones we could have answered. So I think we could have done a better job with that. One of my thoughts was whether we should just create a small handout for people who come that basically says this is what will happen this evening, and then what would follow-up process be or whatever. That might also help for folks, you know.
Okay, where do you want me to go? Enter to the complaint, the online complaint?
Yes.
So that is different.
Or were you hoping one of these line items right here would be, you know, display a copy of the ethics code?
Well, it has it. When you get into enter a contact complaint.
Right here?
Yeah, I think that's where I went.
Oh, you know what? It's going to 311. That's why.
Now, what all does a conduct complaint entail? I mean, that's a lot of other types of complaints, right, too, of course, right?
Well, the idea of that is to give citizens an opportunity to, you know, say something that they feel is problematic.
If you scroll down.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, it could be even a code violation or something.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Is that a portal just for our ethics complaint or
a
bunch of other ones?
No,
as
no,
well?
I thought it was for others.
So the good news, if something does go into that forum, it does come to us if city staff believes it is a ethics complaint.
Yeah.
But
no, that's not where I went.
I think it's important to remember though that I don't think any answer we would have given them on anything would have helped that situation. I mean, other than giving them the answer they wanted, they wouldn't have been. There's just so much information you can give that.
I appreciate that. The problem with the emotions being high, I think that was true. But I think what happened in part was several people said, I just have a question. And it seemed like our collective response sort of was, we won't answer any questions, and Joe will give you a brief statement. And I think that just fanned a lot of that. I just think, in retrospect, not blaming, but just trying to say, how can we do this in a better way? They may not get. I think we all would stand by the outcome we had.
Yeah, and I think that was
that
a new
process.
If you scroll down, though, I think you can file like an anonymous complaint, or if that loaded. Yeah, so maybe click on the anonymous one. And see what happens.
Oh, right here.
Yeah.
And I also think that was a new circumstance for all of us. So
well,
the next time that comes around, we'll deliberate a little more and be able to give people more information.
I'm perplexed on why it's going to 311.
I mean, and partly I think we have, because I think the procedural questions I don't have a problem answering, but I think what they wanted was specific information about how we came to our decision. And I think once you pierce the veil of our executive session, that's when it gets, you know, why did you think this, or why did you consider it?
Well, there were a few other kinds of questions.
Yeah, I mean,
I think there was probably some of it, but having now had that experience, you know, can we do a better job of helping them understand we can talk about this, but we can't talk about that?
I
think we can as a board, and I think we also can by giving people more basic information too. So there's two things that we can do.
Let's see. We view the code of ethics, so if you go there. Okay, so
you click on the ethics violation, or if they think it's an ethics violation.
Yeah. I mean, I think the problem is this portal is supposed to be for, it's not just ethics, it's just for...
Yeah, it's for all of them.
Right.
Yeah.
But what happens when you click on City Ordinance Title 1? Does it just take you to...
Down the
review
code of ethics?
If that takes you to the whole municipal code, we should...
Yeah.
Oh, all right. That one we probably can...
We can link that easily just to the smaller subset.
Yeah.
And maybe there's... Or maybe... What happens when they file? Do they get some feedback back? Do they get information back that it's been received?
We acknowledge the receipt of
it,
and then we let them know that once, you know, we get a quorum of the council together... We let them know that when their complaint's going to be heard.
Okay.
Doris, could we look at the Tacoma Ethics Board website or page?
Sure.
And that those processes are in, they're contained in the city code. There's a whole section on the complaint process or the complaint process for this board, which is what Doris just said. The board, upon receipt of the complaint, acknowledges receipt of the complaint, so telling the person that we've received it, forward the complaint to the person who's complained against and to the city attorney, and then the board needs to meet and review the complaint.
So do you send that process to them as an attachment?
I don't think so. I think it's the clerk sends a letter that says we've received your ethics, your complaint.
And it tells all of those steps in there?
Well, okay.
Probably more generally.
Yeah.
But we could look at that correspondence and you could certainly come up with some ideas to tailor it to, you know, have it be more informative.
And I think just to start, you know, I would be happy just with, you know, having a link to file a complaint on our ethics board website and also having a link to the ethics code, not the whole municipal code. And doing those two things, I think, would be a step in the right direction. And we could keep discussing this and we could possibly develop something down the road. I don't think we need to solve it right now. But if other members want us to work with staff and develop some kind of handout, you know, that's something that wouldn't be too bad, and also we could probably do without changing the ethics code, I believe.
Yeah. And there's a link there to file an ethics.
File
an ethics complaint. So I think all you need, either move it so it's more prominent or leave it and just add a link to the ethics code.
Right here.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
And it goes straight to that 311 where they file everything. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So maybe here too we could have a link to the ethics code.
We could, I could put one right here.
Okay. Throw your magic.
Or we could even just, you know.
See, there, I think it's right here. See, it's right here. It's just not.
Oh,
okay. So prominent.
Yeah,
well, but it's going to Title I. I just don't understand that.
Well, yes. You could get it there.
It's in Title
I.
I know,
but I just thought it would be like.
Yeah.
Title I is just really big.
Yeah. So I can fix
well,
that.
Well, I think for the average citizen, you know, just doing it at all, I mean, certainly people who are involved in other things, but just the average citizen doing it, it's already intimidating enough. So the more we can help them not feel like it's a hostile process, I guess that's what I want to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I can fix those two. I can put the link on the code on the link of the code on our website, as well as try and make the submittal of a conduct complaint a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Oh, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Good.
Is there any other discussion on this matter? Do we need to talk more deeply about providing people information? And that's kind of, it is a unique circumstance. We don't get.
Absolutely. Yeah,
but we might
the
next time.
It's a great opportunity to learn and think things through, and
yep.
Probably will help us never have it happen again. You know?
We could, as staff, Doris and I can work on this. We could do a draft of maybe a high level, some bullet points of a process, just the complaint process to sort of explain it to people who are availing themselves of it.
Sure.
Just a few,
just a nice one pager or something.
Yeah. Or if we did maybe a one pager like for here, because when I was looking, I noticed that even the Pierce County Ethics Commission, I think people have a tough time understanding executive session. So maybe just if we had some kind of FAQ that was a pile and just something that explains executive session and that it's why it's closed and it is closed, and because I think executive session gets a misunderstanding. People think that it's secretive and it's so maybe why it's closed, you know, to give a chance for a deliberative process.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, and for some privacy issues for people as well. And then I think also, what if the board found that there was some reason to go forward, what would be the next kind of steps that would happen? I think that would be helpful
mm-hmm.
for us too.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any other discussion on that? Are you feeling like we're in the right direction on that,
yeah.
Linda?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you for bringing that up.
So does there
up.
Need
That's
to be anything in the code that says when we create this, how we use this one-page thing?
I don't think you need that in the code. I think
does
that
it
would
need to be? Or?
Well, it shouldn't rewrite the code. We shouldn't say something different, but I don't think you would need anything in the municipal code or in the code of ethics that talks about
it's just a courtesy
FAQ.
Copy
mm-hmm.
that
yeah,
we're giving them
mm-hmm.
to
educational
help them understand
mm-hmm.
those phrases and lines that are right there.
Because mm-hmm.
we have good staff support that will get it to people, so
yeah.
we know we have good people. We have the best folks working with us, so we don't need to change the code.
And the better we prep someone coming in, the easier
exactly.
the process is when they're in there.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so moving on to the next item of business. Discussing the definition of immediate family and conflicts of interest. Everybody, if you could, just turn to 1.46.030 of the Ethics Code, and that's generally what we look at when we're looking at complaints. And without getting into any specifics, we discussed a case in the past where we felt like the person who was complained against maybe should have had a minor violation, but there wasn't anything in the ethics code to allow us to do that when we did the literal reading. And basically, if you go to 1.46.030, it talks about remote interests. So no city officer or employee shall participate in his or her capacity as an officer or employee in the making of a contract in which he has a financial interest, direct or indirect. Now that's the main thing. With the meaning of section 6.6, this is the part I'm having us look at. Except that this prohibition shall not apply where the city officer or employee has only a remote interest in the contract and where the fact that the interest is disclosed and noted in the official minutes. So that wouldn't even require them, I think, to recuse themselves if they disclosed it, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And a remote interest, in this case, so if that person who approved that particular contract was a non-salaried officer in a nonprofit, they would have had to disclose that. They probably should have recused themselves. I don't think we require them to do that, but at least disclose that. And they don't have a financial interest. However, that doesn't apply to immediate family members. I'd say children, mother, father, brother, sister, or spouse. I wouldn't include anything beyond that. So if I was going to consider that, I would add another section in the remote interest code that would say that of a family member or an immediate family member, however we want to define that, as simple as possible.
Actually,
who is a non-salaried officer in a nonprofit corporation.
Immediate family is already defined in the code. If you go to the definitions section
okay.
in the front,
Let's
it says...
That's helpful.
In definitions in I, under 1.46020, I says immediate family shall have the meaning set forth in 1.241.30, which is part of the personnel code, and that says immediate family means spouses, dependents, anyone residing in the person's household, and anyone within the third degree of consanguinity of the person. So I think
that
means
is
third
that
cousins.
Okay.
Or the person's spouse. So cousins of
okay.
you or your spouse. And then it says within 3 degrees of relationship by blood or marriage. So that's defining the third degree. And I did not write this, but
okay.
I just wanted to let you know.
It works, so hey.
That it's there. So,
okay.
So would you repeat those again? Spouses?
So immediate family means spouses, dependents, and anyone residing in the person's household, and anyone within the third degree of consanguinity of the person, so the person's third cousins, or the person's spouse, so third cousins of a person's spouse, within and then they say, e.g., example, within 3 degrees of relationship by blood or marriage. So immediate family is defined here anyway as somewhat more than immediate.
So 3 degrees would be my sister's children's children? Is that 3 degrees? Or is that two?
That's or, always
or four?
Me.
Yeah.
That's a little further than I would want to go, but that's okay. I'll have to think about that one when I go home and I'll look it up on the internet.
Figure out who they are. Yeah.
Yeah, but it is defined in there, so that's a good thing. So I would say that adding the definition for a remote interest of an immediate family member would be important. And that would basically make the code more clear. And that would, if somebody did, you know, approve some funding for something where there's a remote interest and didn't disclose it, then that should be an issue that we should consider. Is there any thoughts on that?
Well, and not... We can look at it further, but one place describes third-degree relatives as a blood relative, which includes the individual's first cousins, great-grandparents, or great-grandchildren.
Okay. So it's not quite...
Because second degree is individual's grandparents, grandchildren, aunts, uncles, nephews, nieces, and half-siblings, and first degree is parents, full siblings, or children.
Thank you. That's really helpful.
In that language, I would presume, I don't need an answer, but I would presume that that's consistent with other legal entities that define immediate family members. So we don't really want to get into changing that. But and if we did propose an amendment, then I believe that would go to the city council, and they would consider it and hold a hearing on it and then approve or not approve it, right? Is that basically the gist of the process?
I think we would probably go before a committee first.
Yeah.
A council committee. And then have it
so you're
sort of vetted there and then recommended to go forward to the council.
Yeah. Okay, got it.
And can I just clarification? So,
of course.
Because I think what, just to make sure, so you're saying, for example, if you had a city officer employee who, let's say they had a spouse who was a non-salaried officer of a nonprofit that was going to receive some benefit, they would have to disclose that or...
Yeah, and probably this mostly would pertain to, like, a council member who voted on something to fund, you know, for the human services budget.
Their cousins.
And that they had a first cousin who was a member of this.
Receiving funds.
I would, you know, as far as the first and second cousin thing, I would worry a little bit that they don't know.
We don't have to get to second.
Yeah.
Clearly I wasn't paying attention in the trusts and estates class.
Well, I would worry a little that, you know, I have cousins and I have absolutely no idea
what
boards they're on. And I would rather define it much more immediately than that, I guess. But I think it is important, even if we don't redefine that at all, even for this section, to add that in there possibly. And I think the way we would go about it is to draft some language and then discuss it at our next regular meeting. I don't think it's a terrible rush to talk about this. So.
And is the only place you want to add that is section 1? Or for 1 through 4 to add that?
Well, it would be, these are the definitions, of course, of remote interests.
Right.
And it would be number 5, basically, if we propose
something. Oh, I see.
So it would be another item that defines a remote interest in which a person would have to disclose that remote interest.
Would you not do it up above where it says, except that this prohibition should not apply when the city officer or employee or an immediate family member thereof? Would that not?
We don't want to use the words immediate family member because it's too confusing and nobody's going to know if they're in violation or not because it's too broad. Because how many of us know who our third cousin is?
We don't have to.
No, we only have to worry about first cousins.
Okay.
Even first cousins, how many of us know?
I got 13 of them. I don't know what they're doing.
And, what they're doing, what boards they're on, who they're serving.
But the issue is you know who they are. I mean, you don't.
Well, we could even add in that lack of knowledge that that person is on that board would be a legitimate defense.
But if this person is doing a contract, correct, part of what they're reviewing are the materials from that entity that's applying, of which they would then be seeing their list of board members. Is that not true?
That's a good point, I think, at least.
I don't know how much people read into things that they fund or vote on or get into their contracts, but that would make it so it may be prudent to take
one
a look at
things,
those, and that wouldn't be...
There's a checklist I'm looking at for what I'm looking at is to make sure I don't have any...
But we can add
clarification is a good thing, and that wouldn't be too onerous.
But I guess for number five, if we're at, I mean, we can we don't have to use, if we want to stay away from the definition of immediate family, you can say number five, this would also apply to spouses, children. I mean, we can set out what we want it.
A more limited,
mm-hmm. as they follow through one through four. I mean, but I'm assuming you're saying if my spouse is a landlord, I mean, it's the spouses for any of one through four, not, you understand what I'm saying? Because we're saying it's, if your spouse is a non-salary officer of the nonprofit or is the spouse is an employer or agent of a contracting party where the compensation, I mean, you wanted to apply that for all four.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay.
So it seems like it should
go. And then
go
just add another one, basically.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Up above.
But he's saying that if you want the spouse to be in all four, then you would need to add it in the main language up above.
Right.
You can just add it at the end because then it wouldn't say, like, the remote interest doesn't mean that my spouse is a non-salaried officer unless my spouse was up here in the original language, and then it would say remote interest means.
Well, I think we could just add another item to the definition of remote interest. I think it would complicate it to add it up here because, you know, then it would be a remote interest includes number one, non-salary officer, nonprofit corporation. That would be the person taking the vote. And then number two, a remote interest would also include an immediate family member who is a non-salaried officer or a nonprofit corporation. So if my spouse was a nonprofit, you know, director but didn't take any salary, then I would have to disclose that before I took a vote or took action if we did it like that. Now, if the person has a financial interest, that's covered in another part of our ethics code. So financial interest is a lot more serious than a non-financial interest.
But you're talking about
but we can't
just adding a fifth line in there?
Yeah,
right?
To the definition of a remote interest.
But, like, if my spouse was a non-salaried officer, like, how would that be clarified in the fifth?
It depends on how you write it.
Yeah.
If you wrote it that a spouse was any of the one through fours above.
Okay. Yeah. That could, yeah.
Yeah, it defines a remote interest. It says, let's see, if they have a remote interest in the contract and where the fact and extent of such interest is disclosed and noted in the official minutes or similar records of the city prior to formation of the contract, and thereafter the city council authorizes, approves, ratifies the contract in good faith by its membership sufficient for the purpose without counting the voter votes of the officer having the remote interest. Okay, so it doesn't count the vote of that person. I was confused on that point. So.
Well, they can vote. They don't have to recuse, but the contract has to be ratified with enough of a majority that their vote
doesn't count
toward their vote.
Okay, thank you for clarifying that. So, but I hope that all makes sense to everybody.
So, but what it says right now, I just want to make sure that we're all on the same page here, is it starts off by saying this is a prohibition for city officers or employees. So a city employee or an elected official is prohibited from participating in the making of a contract in which they have a financial interest. Mm-hmm. So a council member cannot participate in the making of a contract, vote to award it, if they have a financial interest in that contract.
Right.
So that would be the prohibition, mm-hmm. except if the city officer or employee only has a remote interest in that contract, then it would be okay.
Yep.
And then we define remote interest as these things, which is also consistent with the way it's defined in state law, and it does cross-reference to the city charter.
Mm-hmm.
So if you change it, we'd want to look at, or propose to change it, we'd want to look at all of those other places and make sure we're not undoing something that there's no authority to undo.
Okay.
But I just want to understand what the thought to do that would be is to say, to somehow also say that no city officer or employee or their spouse can participate.
Well, you're saying first degree.
Or their
immediate family member.
Their first degree family is what you mm-hmm. were saying.
Can participate yeah. in
having.
I thought it was the, if you had a spouse, or let's say a first degree.
Or child.
Who was a non-salaried officer of the nonprofit corporation, you would have to disclose that relationship. I'm not a non-salaried person, but my ex is XYZ or.
And she shouldn't be lobbying you to vote on a particular contract because she has too much of a vested interest
yeah.
in that particular thing. And that's kind of my point.
Well, but that would already be prohibited because you would have a financial interest. If you award a contract to a company or even a nonprofit that your spouse or your daughter or whatever, you know, we would presume that that would create an indirect financial interest to you. So that's already.
Not if they're a non-salaried officer, though.
If they're non-salaried.
Yeah, that's what we kind of, that's okay. where we got stuck on.
So that's the one that's the challenging one is the nonprofit.
Because if they're a non-salaried officer, you know, then all that person has to do is disclose it, but it doesn't include their immediate family, the mm-hmm. way that we read the code. So at least it's not clear in that case then.
Okay. So you could put in a line above that that says, a remote interest means, and you could put myself as an employee, comma, my spouse, comma, my children, comma, and those living in my household may not fulfill any of the following four conditions.
Yeah, all right, you know, as simple as you could keep it would be better, you know, that of a non-salaried officer, that of an immediate family member who is a non-salaried officer. Because the other part of the ethics code, if they are an employee, it already covers that, because then they have a direct financial interest.
Right.
And that's really clear in the code.
Do we need to add that your language to all of them, or just do you put it...
You would just need another item.
Is it just number one that's at issue that you say, that remote interest means that of a non-salaried officer of... That the employee yeah. or their first degree is a non-salaried officer of a nonprofit, and you only need to change one, or do we need to change 1, 2, 3, and 4?
We would either change number one and add that, or we would add a number 5, basically.
Number five being limited to a first, if a first degree of a non-salaried officer.
Whatever's more simple.
Okay.
I'm
trying to figure out if it's the scope.
Clearer if it's attached to one.
It would just be another thing. These things are all separate. I mean,
right.
If they have any one of these things that constitutes a remote interest, and then if they had the number 5 that we're proposing, it would constitute a remote interest. If we didn't do that, these still would apply. We don't have to change any of these because they stand alone, basically.
No. I guess my question is more of the scope. Let's call it the spousal remote interest. Is the spousal remote interest applies... In your just to the issue of number one, or the issue of number one, number two,
just,
number three, and number four?
Just a non-salaried officer of a nonprofit corporation.
That one you can probably just then change it to number one would be...
Yeah, that's probably right. Add a little bit to that.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah.
So your only concern is that when somebody doesn't disclose that their spouse is...
Or their child, or their...
Or their whatever, is
yeah.
a non-salaried officer of the corporation.
Right.
It's a little bit, it's not a direct financial interest, but it's a little
right.
bit of an undue influence, in my opinion. So, and it's something that's not entirely clear,
yeah.
and I would never violate somebody on any kind of complaint unless the code was clear, basically. So,
so can we take a step back, though?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, or I guess the city council ultimately will decide, but I guess, I mean, like, the question is, do we need to change? I guess because what we're saying is, that the ethic board feels that should be a violation if you don't disclose that your spouse isn't, or ex-relative is not
yeah.
a member. And I guess that's the first question. Do we need to change it, or do we have a consensus that should be... And I wasn't here for that issue, so
well,
it sounds like at some point the board felt that it should be, I guess.
I think the sentiment was that we all felt that we should have violated this individual, but we couldn't. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Or found them in violation.
I just would advise that if you talk about things that were discussed during your deliberative process, then you no longer have a privilege over that. So just...
Okay.
I mean, you're, as a body, you're free to waive that privilege, but I would just let you know that
So let's not go any further.
More like hypothetically, I guess we're saying... What the board wants to say, though, is if there's a council, an employee who's voting on a contract, if their first-degree relative is part of that nonprofit corporation that may receive or has a remote interest, that's something that the ethics board feels should be disclosed before voting on it.
So, you know, if your son was the executive director or some kind of managing member of X nonprofit, and you say, oh, son, wow, you know, you're... nonprofit is doing good, we're going to fund it. What do you think about that? I'm going to try to get the funding a little higher for you. I mean, that's my conflict. You know, that's what I'm thinking. That's just hypothetical, but...
Non-salaried, right?
Yeah.
He's just running... The city employee is, the son is...
Well, the son wouldn't be... he would be a nonprofit as well. Like, he wouldn't be making any money from it. That would be what this would be. If he was making money, then he couldn't... He would have to disclose that because his dad wouldn't.
Well, because if he was making
financial,
if the son was making money, it would be a direct or indirect financial interest. So this is for someone on the board who's not making money,
as a board member.
And it is a more minor issue than a direct financial interest, but it is covered in a remote interest. So it's obviously important to the people that wrote these exceptions, because none of these remote interests, these four things that are in there, constitute a direct financial interest.
Because your son would still benefit in the success of the company.
Yeah.
Not financially, but looks better on his resume. The company didn't tank while he helped manage it.
Or there's other benefits, you know. Yeah.
Well, there's potential for use of influence because of that. Because there's a commitment to it, and so we're looking for not having influence that's personal, and essentially.
I just see it as a common sense, and I see it as code clarification. Uh-huh. That's all I see it as. So,
if we're interested, who drafts like proposed language? Is it the board? Is it someone for us to at least consider whether to pass up to the city? Who drafts a proposed?
You could do it a couple of ways. You could ask that staff would come up with something that captured, hopefully, your discussion. Or you could also hash it out together. Or you could, ask that a smaller group of you maybe work on it and bring it back to the group. Or even just one of you, if one of you wanted to volunteer to write something up and bring it back.
Yeah, I was thinking, since kind of it was my idea, I'd write it, run it by you, have you tighten it up, and then we would just take it and discuss it and vote yes or no on it.
Sounds fun to me. Sure. It would be helpful, I think, maybe for you to look at it before we look at it again, just to see if there are any issues.
Sure.
So
if somebody else wants to participate with me on that, you're more than welcome, I believe. Otherwise,
you can have two, but not
three. So if anyone is, let at any point in time, either right now or later, just let staff know, and then you could work with me on it. Otherwise, I'm happy just to do it myself. It's something that's not too complex or anything. So any other discussion on that?
So I could propose that we assign Joe to write an amendment to 1.46.030A1.
And I don't...
That would clarify... who non-salaried officer of nonprofit organization should apply to besides the officer.
Yep. And I don't know if we need anything formal to work on it, right? We don't need to vote on it right now, right?
No, you can have consensus, but if you wanted to make a motion, that would also be appropriate. So.
Okay.
So if someone wanted a second.
I'll second.
Whatever.
I wasn't sure if that was a motion. I'll second.
If you're making a motion, I'd like to make an amendment then to not
making,
include...
I'm making a motion that he would draft up the amendment to...
Yeah, I would like to make an amendment of your motion.
Okay, so wait. So he made a... make your motion.
Or can we have a discussion?
I move that we assign Joe to draft up an amendment to 1.46.030A.1.
Okay.
Can we have section A discussion?
Second.
Oh, sorry. I'll second.
Okay. Okay. Now it's
time. Discussion. Okay, Tony.
So, like, I would like to just have it be A, and that way, like, if needed, you could do all of the ones underneath or that paragraph instead of just the one.
So, do you have a second? Is there a second for his proposed amendment?
I'll second that. That way we all have a role.
And can I make another amendment?
Because we're only trying to adjust definition of remote interest. We're not adjusting Section A.
Tony's not fully satisfied with that. So one of the things he wants you to look at is should that amendment be up here in A or should it be a part of 8.1?
I think it should be a part of the definition of remote interest.
But that remote interest would mean you're defining all of A. So all... Remote interest.
No,
is part of A.
Remote interest is part of A. It's a small part of A.
So you've got.
I don't think it matters. It gives you flexibility. Yeah. I think his amendment just gives you flexibility if you want to put it somewhere else.
Okay.
You can choose to do that or choose not because it just gives you that flexibility.
Okay. I'll look into it. And if I can do it, I will.
Oh, have to. You need to vote on his amendment.
Okay. So. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Okay, your amendment passes.
Okay, now you need to back vote on the main motion.
Amendment to Bill's motion.
But before I go on this, sorry. But because Joe asked, I mean, because the motion is for Joe, but if other people up to, not that won't make a quorum, wants to help him, do we have to amend that motion so it's Joe and up to... you know, two other committee members
or one other?
Mm-hmm. No more than one other.
No more than a... That's, I guess, would be my amendment. It's Joe and no more than one other committee member look at drafting it. So that'll give Joe an ability to bring somebody else to look at it.
Okay. First come, first serve. Okay. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Passes? Okay.
And now we have to...
Now we have to vote on the...
Multiply amended motion.
It's amended. As amended.
Okay. So, let's vote on Bill's amendment. So, all in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? Passes unanimous. Okay. I think we took care of that. Good job, guys.
Yes, that was hard.
Is there an opportunity to ask about one other thing?
Yes.
This is just for my own learning and growth. Just before I came on the board, I remember, I think it was in the Seattle Times, but there was an article about the Pierce County Ethics Board in the paper. The whole issue was about executive session, essentially. And which just leads me to question, are there other ethics boards that function in different ways? Or is that a standard way ethics boards function relative to that? And if there are, might we sort of see if there's anything we can learn from how other boards are functioning?
Well, staff could maybe give an explanation too, but since we're a type of quasi-judicial organization, we are able to accept legal advice, and we have the privilege of taking that legal advice in a closed session. And it's important to keep that, but I suppose we could, as a board, decide to take legal advice outside of that. It might not be advisable in most circumstances.
I'm not making any judgment about that. I'm just interested to know if there are other ways that other boards function in this state under the state laws, and how is that? Just to know if there's a different way that might suit us more or less. We may decide this is absolutely the most perfect way to be, but we may learn some things. And
so
I
did
just,
you use an executive session in your hospital board, ethics board of the hospital?
There was the potential to do that, but we did not very often. But we usually had interviewed so many people before we did a very thorough investigation ahead of time, so all the parties that were involved had been involved in an investigation before we sat down to do the ethics. So it took on a very different kind of role.
So in our one pager, could we have sort of a definition of the reasons of for executive session?
But my question just is an educational one for us. How do other people do it?
We're governed by state law, of course.
Well, I understand that.
I think
that,
there may be some flexibility. So
but there
I
must
don't know
be.
What other
if there was,
do.
I'm just thinking, if there was an article saying this group does it this way, it just strikes me that there are others doing it differently.
We can take a look at that for you, Linda. We can add that to our list.
I would appreciate
it. Do a little roundup of Pierce County, City of Seattle, and
Spokane. I mean, because there's so many cities and so many counties.
They're all a little bit different. Yeah. Yeah. And the county actually, I think they've actually passed it, but they recently made some changes in response to that publicity, I know, as a fact. So they might even be doing it differently now.
Yeah, and I even heard the City of Seattle, their ethics code encompasses elections, too. So it would be good for us to know what other places do. So whatever you all could do to help, that'd be great.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Are there any other member comments? Okay, it is 7:25 on August 31st, and we are adjourned.